Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight. I cannot believe it's Friday, but it's Friday. The weeks seem to go by. The days are in a blur.
Yes, they are.
And it's not because we're older. It's because the news is just so blurry.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking about being suppressed yesterday, I think it was on our show, about how I had a website that was pulled and had a Wikipedia story about me that was mysteriously pulled. But you talked about we were posting something on one of our social networks yesterday, and they wouldn't allow you to post it. And it was something absolutely in the norm. Nothing was inappropriate. There was no foul language. There was nothing that was conspiratorial. It was just an opinion piece that we normally do. Am I right, Bill?
Yeah, it was Facebook. I always post it on my personal page. I don't write any notes or anything to it. I just put the link up, and that's it. Now, the link will pull up the description of the show, but there was nothing in there.
No.
As a matter of fact, I think you talked about the $60 billion budget thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's news. That is news.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and we didn't talk about anything controversial at all yesterday. And it is news and opinion, but it sat there and it banned it. And then it sat there and said, do you want to know why you were banned? Yeah, I'd like to know the hell why we were banned from it. And it goes, well, this is a warning shot over the bow. You've done this a couple of times. We think that you are spam. You know, that you are sitting there trying to get clicks and likes.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, you know, we don't do that, folks. Man. We never have done that. We just post the latest episode every day. And
well,
you hope that you find it. But that's pretty interesting.
You don't see people on the right posting anything at all on the internet, but you always see a lot of stuff from the left. I'm trying to open up.
Well, you know, the other thing is this: you don't see a lot of, or hear a lot of people on the left getting their stuff shadow banned or banned altogether. The people on the left, they can post whatever they want to post about whatever they want to post, and there's no consequences for them. It's just when you have an opposing opinion from the people, the 20-year-olds that run these social networks. And by the way, for the most part, they're young kids who haven't got a lot of life experience there. So they basically are liberal. And if you don't, if they don't agree with what you're posting, you know, it doesn't get posted.
And if you post something that's an opinion, if it's not their opinion, it's a lie.
Yep.
But you see somebody from the left that goes, you know, that posts things like, anybody that likes Trump can't be a friend of mine, or this one that they posted yesterday, which I was actually going to tear apart and dissect, because this has got so many fallacies, and it's basically three sentences, and it's about abortion. An egg is not a chicken. A seed is not a flower. An embryo is not a baby. Her body is not your body. There's so much wrong with that. You know, an egg is not a chicken, but it will be. You know, a seed is not a flower, but it will be.
Just do the continuation of the cell. Continuation of the splitting of the first two cells. From the time the two cells split for the first time, right? At conception, they continue that process without stopping until you die. Okay, it's not like it goes along for 9 months and stops, and then starts again.
It continues.
Life
continues after death, but that's a whole different thing. But you know what? An egg, if it becomes a chicken, a living being, or it's a cell, or it is an embryo, it is a form of life.
But I think, Bill, that the people on the left who believe in abortion, they justify it to themselves by that argument, the one you're just saying, that an egg is not a person, a so-and-so is not a such-and-such. This is how they justify it. Otherwise, it's not justifiable, you know.
And her body is not your body. Well, let me tell you something, ladies. It's not your body either. And the baby's body is not yours by that definition. As a matter of fact, when you were born, and even before you're born, you're identified, cataloged, numbered. And when you come out, you are taxed. You have to work. You have to do things. You have laws that govern you. Oh, wait a minute. You're a slave to something out there. You don't own yourself. You know, this whole thing is a farce.
Well,
you know,
folks, I have very rarely met or read of people who have had the procedure who are truly happy about it. Afterwards, they seem to live with some kind of regret. Even the ones who go around and say, "I feel good. I had an abortion." If you got them alone, you know, and you sat them down,
they don't feel so good about it.
They don't feel good. They're
saying that about the transgenders and the people that are getting the sex change, and you know they're pushing now that kids can do it, and that you're free to change your sexual identity because that is just something. Well, you know what? How you identify, that's a mental disorder to me, but okay, that's just me. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
But the physicality of you,
yeah,
it is what it is. Now, yeah, science can let you go in and change it, but then again, just like they're saying, well, you know, you could evolve and change your identity over time. So you change your physicality, and then you evolve and go, I want to go back to what I was, but I can't because I screwed up. Well, there you go.
You know, I want to point out, I always like to point this out, whenever we're talking about abortion and about how we feel about the process and the procedure, I do want to emphasize to people who have had the procedure that if you're truly regretful and sorry that you had it, I do believe that it's a loving God, and he knows you, okay? He knows you deep down inside. And if you made a rash, we are by nature, by the animal that we are, we make mistakes. It is the nature of our beast. It's the nature of what we do. Our life is one day of mistakes after another. Every day we make a mistake about something. We always do.
Yeah.
It's the nature of who we are. So if you've made that mistake, but you regret it and you're sorry for it, I truly believe that God in his goodness loves you and forgives you. And I don't take that lightly. I don't think God is a fool either. If you don't truly believe that you're sorry, you're just trying to put one over on him, he knows that too, okay? You got to feel sorry deep down inside and ask for forgiveness and mean it, you know? But anyway.
I was going to throw a weird question at you, but I'll save it for another
time. No, go ahead. I like weird
questions.
Well,
I was just going to say, you know, a continuation of that, you know, the simple fact is, when you look at life and everything, and you look at the people that sit there and go, well, there is no God. And then I was sitting there going, well, you might not believe there is a God. You don't understand God. But if you were a person that created something, you know, it might be you built something and you're proud of it. You don't want anybody to destroy it. As a matter of fact, somebody, you create a child.
Yeah.
You're going to grow up and protect that child.
Right.
At any cost. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say that right now we're on the verge of destroying this planet and all life on it. God's creation.
Right.
Some divine entity's creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're not going to come back for 1 minute and think that they're not going to come back and protect it and, you know, protect
what
they
may? Well, hey, listen, you know, that's an interesting thought. I mean, do I think that God is going to intervene? I do. I don't think it doesn't mean that I think he's going to make his presence known and, you know, the clouds are going to part. But I do believe he can intervene through people. I think God works through good people. Even, by the way, you know, people say, well, do you think Trump is God, he's orange and he likes women and he used to chase skirts and stuff like that. But wait a second. You know, if you look at the apostles that used to walk around with, dare I say, Jesus Christ, they were fishermen, you know, and fishermen of the time were like cowboys of the Wild West. They were tough. They told stories. They liked women. They were tough guys. Yet Christ saw something in them, the strength in them, and the dedication and the loyalty in them, and they appreciated Christ for who he was. Now, I don't mean to be doing a sermon here, but I do believe that God is going to protect this planet and the good people in it. I do think that because we're people, it's frightening sometimes. I mean, every day I worry for my family. I worry for my kids my grandkids, I think, God, what kind of world are they going to live in if it's so screwed up right now and we have such a bumbling, stumbling fool, you know, sitting in the driver's seat right now? How can we possibly make it? Well, getting to your question, I think God is, he's going to intervene, you know.
If I created something and I saw you were going to destroy it, I'll smack it and you down before I ever give you the chance to destroy it.
Right, right. And I think God is going to stand fast. He's going to stand.
It was just a weird question.
I think it's a good question and worth considering. It also gives us hope. You know, I think that, I mean, today before the show started, before we, you know, connected this morning, I'm thinking, you know, does anybody realize how close we are right now at this very moment to a nuclear war? Not just with Russia, by the way. Not just with Russia. I saw a movie last night called Unthinkable. Okay, and it was done in 2010, so it's been around for 14 years.
Yeah, before Trump. Yeah,
and it was very well done. Samuel L. Jackson. I think his name is Martin Sheen. Michael Sheen. Anyway, great actor, played the part of the terrorist, and you know, I was. It's the premise is that this terrorist, who's a nuclear expert, has planted three nuclear bombs in major cities around the country, and he is told the world that he's going to blow them up by a certain time. And the process and the premise of the movie is getting the names and locations out of this guy before it's too late. And I'll leave it at that. And the movie is, it's good, but it's not great. It missed some really good opportunities to just be a killer of them. I mean, I don't mean that literally. I mean,
it really was a killer movie.
A big movie, but it was close, but no cigar. But the premise is scary because never have we been closer to this kind of scenario than right now. With all of these strangers that have come across the border, you know, all of these Chinese military-age men who have just escaped into our country, you don't know. And, you know, when you have Christopher Wray, by the way, our esteemed director of the FBI, saying in a hearing in Congress, I've never seen a more dangerous time than right now. I worry every day about the possibility of terrorist attack. This is the guy who's supposed to be protecting us from things like that, and he was, like, lost. So you have to ask yourself, what is the possibility, Bill, of nuclear bombs being in major cities right now, being set up and getting ready for just such a case, you know?
Well, let me change that P word from possibility to probability. There is a high probability that there is. And with what's going on, you know, the Democrats have lost the black vote. That's pretty clear. And it looks like they're losing the Hispanic vote, so they're going to import new people. That's what they're doing.
Right.
The youth. Oh, we got the youth. We can count on the youth. We're going to give them student loan forgiveness. Well, I've got a son that's graduating.
Right.
Right.
Young guy.
Now, just a few weeks from now. And I'm sitting there going, well, what's the temperament of somebody? Because we were talking about Biden and the debate and, you know, whether there should be one or not. And he goes, well, you know, he's so old and all of that stuff, but he had an interesting point. But, you know, I go on and, you know, as we're talking there, I'm sitting there trying to catch my train again. But
no, I know what you're saying. He had some interesting thoughts about the future.
Yeah, that's where I was going, is with the future. He's sitting there going, I said, well, you know, you say Biden's old, but he's not really old. He's 80. Yeah, he's losing it. He's kind of senile and everything, and he's lost it. But they've proven that the average age for that a man can live is 114.1 years. Now, I was going to go on to say women get about an extra year, but I never got that out. He goes, oh, my, really? I said, what do you mean? What do you mean, really? He goes, I wouldn't want to live to be that old. I'm sitting there going, I'm kind of looking forward to long life because they tell me, well, you can't guarantee time, but you're in great health, you know? So I'm going, that's great. He goes, not in this world. He goes, I'm, and his friends are that way too. And they're not suicidal, but they're just saying, I'm going, what's wrong? They're going, not in this world, not in this lifetime. unless things were better or we had got into some kind of utopia, forget about
it. Hey, Bill.
This is a messed up world, and that's the youth. And Democrats and Biden, that's on you.
Hey, how would you like to be 21 years old and basically a conservative, you know, and be looking on TV every day and see your contemporaries, or it would appear that they are your contemporaries, you know, protesting at Columbia, at Harvard, at Yale, at Emerson, at USC, at University of Texas, all over the country. And you're thinking to yourself, these are my contemporaries who I don't agree with, who are raising hell in this society. Are these the people I have to go through my life with? Now,
yeah, they don't want to do that.
But
and
the
you
good,
know what?
Bill, the good news is, I would pass this along to these young people, is hang on, don't despair, because I grew up in the 60s, and there were some wackos who protested the damnedest things in the 60s, too, and thank God they grew out of it, okay?
Well, some of them did. Yeah, the rest of them went to Congress and the Senate.
And the other became professors. You're right. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that was my next point. You know, there's if all of the problems went away, the youth today have not been properly educated as to the values of life and certain things
that they need to know
to survive.
I got a question for you. If you could afford it, if you had the wherewithal, would you send your kid to an Ivy League school right now?
Hell no.
You know, I heard somebody say it, and I absolutely agree with them, that they stopped giving a great education to Ivy League students about 20 years ago. They're more interested in being diverse, having equity and being inclusive, right? This is what they're trying to do. They're trying to preach a liberal religion as opposed to the educational courses that you're paying for.
Well, you know, a lot of these, you talked about these wackos that you grew up with, they went and got the degrees to teach, and they're the professors today, and they're not teaching what the book says that here's your lesson plan. This is what you're supposed to do. They throw it aside and they teach you what they want and their political views. And most students today will tell you to get their degree and to move along, they got to get along. Otherwise, they're not going to get a grade.
I have two.
They indoctrinate.
Two grandchildren. One, a grandson who is going to be a junior next year. And a beautiful, intelligent granddaughter who is graduating this year from a very good school. I'll just leave it alone like that, because I don't want to give out any personal information, because I don't want to embarrass them. But you know what really gets me? My beautiful granddaughter, who is enormously intelligent, she's got it all. This kid's got the whole package. She, for the past 2 years, has been a teaching assistant, right? Which means that she literally teaches lectures to students in classes and gets paid for it, by the way, and for a professor. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. So the parents are spending like 40 grand a year, 50 grand a year, whatever, to send their kids to school to get an education and to learn from these professors. But yet the people who are teaching them are their fellow students. What the hell's with that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that make sense to you?
No, it doesn't, but that's going on all the time. And, you know, back to my point, some of these kids, let's just say the kids that are studying law now.
Yeah.
They're learning law from a liberal who is the liberals that are prosecuting, which is being brought out in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But they don't know the law and they don't know history. They want to rewrite history. And when they rewrite history, they've changed the fundamental constitutional basis of this country, and it is all lost. Everything right now, whether you like Trump or hate him, hinges on how we go forward. If you sit there and, you know, stack the decks against him, then that basically changes everything in history, in the past, and going forward. And we don't have a country anymore.
You know,
and we don't have a border, so we may as well just throw it all away.
I grew up in a home of a lawyer, a criminal trial lawyer, a very good. He went to Brown, went to BU Law, was a DA. The guy had the whole package. He loved law. He ate and slept law. This is my dad. And he wouldn't recognize what's happening in the legal system right now. If he saw how they're acting in New York, for example, he would be physically upset. My father took law so seriously, and he abided by the law. I mean, he would quote to chapter and verse of law and explain why you could or couldn't do something, and he really lived by it. And you look at what's happening now with the way they're using it as a weapon against Trump, he would have been furious and he would have had a hard time understanding how they would have allowed it to get this far. And the other thing, by the way, that happened yesterday, which would have infuriated him, it got me angry, and I was just his kid. But, I mean, President Trump had the constitutional right to be in the Supreme Court yesterday when they were arguing his case in front of the nine justices about presidential immunity. He had the constitutional right to be there. He should have been there.
Well,
but,
you know,
but this
let's divide the cases.
But this dweeb, Marshawn, this lout, this despicable, he looks handsome. My wife said he's a good-looking man. Yeah, he's a good-looking man, and he's evil. He's vile because he's taken that look. He's taking what a judge is and is supposed to be and completely distorted it for his own benefit. So right now, when Trump was supposed to be in Washington, he wasn't. He was in New York. And I believe, didn't they have yesterday off, Bill? I mean, he could have technically, could he have gone? Well, yesterday was Thursday. I guess they reconvened. I guess they had Wednesday off. Anyway, it was an interesting day, Bill, for the case that was presented in Washington. They had a guy named Michael Dreeben, who is the prosecutor for the Justice Department, making his case, which was really kind of weak. And I'm not a lawyer, but I listened to a lot of the pieces. I'm going to play a few of them here. But I thought we should start with the opening statement from Attorney Sauer, who I believe is the attorney for Trump. And the opening statement was really, really good. His name is John Sauer, I believe. He made a real good case, and it was easily easily explainable. Here's the trick. When you're a lawyer, the trick is to stay close to the law, present the law in a way that everybody can understand. Don't be so caught up in yourself that you are presenting your argument in a legalistic way that is confusing. Sauer got it. Sauer hit it on the right on the head. This is his opening statement yesterday in front of the nine justices.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it. For 234 years of American history, no president was ever prosecuted for his official acts. The framers of our Constitution viewed an energetic executive as essential to securing liberty. If a president can be charged, put on trial, and imprisoned for his most controversial decisions as soon as he leaves office, that looming threat will distort the president's decision-making precisely when bold and fearless action is most needed. Every current president will face de facto blackmail and extortion by his political rivals while he is still in office. The implications of the court's decision here extend far beyond the facts of this case. Could President George W. Bush have been sent to prison for obstructing an official proceeding or allegedly lying to Congress to induce war in Iraq? Could President Obama be charged with murder for killing U.S. citizens abroad by drone strike? Could President Biden someday be charged with unlawfully inducing immigrants to enter the country illegally for his border policies? The answer to all these questions is no. Prosecuting the president for his official acts is an innovation with no foothold in history or tradition and incompatible with our constitutional structure. The original meaning of the executive vesting clause, the framers' understanding and intent, an unbroken historical tradition spanning 200 years, and policy considerations rooted in the separation of powers all counsel against it. I welcome the court's questions.
Okay, that's the opening statement from Attorney Sara, and he hits it. He nails it.
Yeah, that's very well put. I mean, it nails it right there. You do this, and you may as well just say it's a free-for-all. But then again, with what he just said, you know, and what we just said before we ever got into this, mm-hmm. is that, you know, we're destroying the very fundamental basis of what we have. You know, not just life in general, but our, you know, the structure by which this country was built.
Yeah,
you want to destroy it, it's gone.
We have
this, it's gone.
We've spent over 200 years living by certain rules, and now you want to examine those rules and procedures and what, change them?
We're imploding is what we're doing. We are imploding. We're falling onto ourselves because of somebody's ideology and quest for power, and then they want to sit there and go, well, Trump, you know, that he was doing this, it was a quest for power. But, you know, and they're talking about the coup of 2020. Well, wait a minute now. Was it a coup? No, it wasn't. It was him believing that the election was stolen.
Which he had a right to, by the way.
And he has a right to. And he has a right to protect himself from that and go and at least open up the hood, as Ross Perot used to say, and take a look under the hood and see what's going on here.
Bill, how many guys who run for office who lose think that maybe they got shafted along the way? Something was taken.
I know a lady that thinks that, by the name of Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Absolutely.
You know, they're saying a coup. Well, you know, okay, if you're saying it was a coup that him to do that, could it not be that he was right and it was stolen and it's a Democratic coup to protect, you know, themselves and their steal?
Well, you know,
think about it. Reverse the question.
They want to punish you if you happen to believe that the election was not proper. For example, they're going after Rudy Giuliani again. They're going after lawyers.
They're going to keep going after
John Eastman. They're going after all these lawyers who happen to be hired to look into the legality of the 2020 election.
They're going after the media.
That's true. But here's the thing. It's not going to work out.
The right media. Yeah.
Here's the problem with this case, and they're worried about this. Mm-hmm. If this case that we're talking about here with the Supreme Court, if they come back and say he has presidential immunity, then all of this other stuff that's out there, all these other little cases going after Trump, nipping at him, they're gone because he had presidential immunity. Even the case down at Mar-a-Lago with the files where they raided his house, he had presidential immunity. If he had presidential immunity, you can't be down there going through his stuff because of that presidential immunity. Justice Alito talked with the prosecutor yesterday, and the prosecutor is trying to make a case, and he's having a very difficult time. And Alito really was not having much of it. It's about a 7-minute piece, but it's really worth listening to the entire thing. It gets a bit into the weeds on occasion, but you're a smart audience, and you'll be able to follow along. Listen, this is Sam Alito and Michael Dreeben. Dreeben. Okay, he's the Justice Department prosecutor, kind of going back and forth.
So the first layer of protection is that attorneys general and other Justice Department attorneys can be trusted to act in a professional and ethical manner, right?
Yes.
How robust is that protection? I mean, most of the vast majority of attorneys general and Justice Department attorneys, and we both served in the Justice Department for a long time, are honorable people, and they take their professional ethical responsibilities seriously. But there have been exceptions, right, both among attorneys general and among federal prosecutors.
There have been rare exceptions, Justice Alito, but when we're talking about layers of protection, I do think this is the starting point. And if the court has concerns about the robustness of it, I would suggest looking at the charges in this case.
Well, I'm going to talk about this in the abstract, because what is before us, of course, does involve this particular case, which is immensely important. But whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents. So as for attorneys general, there have been two who were convicted of criminal offenses while in office. There were others. A. Mitchell Palmer is one that comes to mind, who is widely regarded as having abused the power of his office. Would you agree with that?
I would, but they are two officials in a long line of attorneys generals who did not, and in departments of justice that are staffed by multiple people who do adhere to their office. And Justice Alito, if I could just, the point that I wanted to make about this case does go to the general proposition. The allegations about the misuse of the Department of Justice to perpetuate election fraud show exactly how the Department of Justice functions in the way that it is supposed to. Petitioner is alleged to have tried to get the Department of Justice to send fraudulent letters to the states to get them to reverse electoral results.
I understand that, Mr. Dreeben, but as I said, this case will have effects that go far beyond this particular prosecution. So moving on to the second level of protection that the D.C. Circuit cited, federal grand juries will shield former presidents from unwarranted indictments. How much protection is that?
Well, it affords two levels of protection. One is the probable cause finding requires evidence. I think some of the fears about groundless prosecutions aren't supported by evidence, and they're not going to get out of the starting gate.
I mean, there's the old saw about indicting a ham sandwich.
Yes, but I think Justice Alito,
you had a lot of experience in the Justice Department. You come across a lot of cases where the U.S. attorney or another federal prosecutor really wanted to indict a case and the grand jury refused to do so.
There are such cases. Yes. But I think that the other...
Every once in a while, there's an eclipse, too.
Well, I think that's for the most reason is prosecutors have no incentive to bring a case to a grand jury and secure an indictment when they don't have evidence to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. It's self-defeating.
All right. Then the third level is that former presidents enjoy all the protections afforded all criminal defendants, right? And we've discussed that. And that may be true at the end of the day, but a lot can happen between the time when an indictment is returned and the time when the former president finally gets an indication, perhaps on appeal. Isn't that correct?
It is correct, Justice Alito, but I think that we should also consider the history of this country. As members of the court have observed, it's baked into the Constitution that any president knows that they are exposed to potential criminal prosecution. My friend says after impeachment and conviction, we don't read the impeachment judgment clause that way, but it's common ground that all former presidents have known that they could be indicted and convicted. And Watergate cemented that understanding. The Watergate smoking gun tape involved President Nixon and H.R. Haldeman talking about and then deciding to use the CIA to give a bogus story to the FBI to shut down a criminal investigation.
I mean, Mr. Sauer and others have identified events in the past where presidents have engaged in conduct that might have been charged as a federal crime, and you say, well, no, that's not really true. This is page 42 of your brief. So what about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged under 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against civil rights?
Today, yes, given this court's decision in Trump versus United States, in which the you know, Trump versus Hawaii, excuse me, where the court said Korematsu is overruled. I mean, President Roosevelt made that decision with the advice of his attorney general. That's a layer of
safeguard. Is that really true? I thought Attorney General Biddle thought that there was really no threat of sabotage, as did J. Edgar Hoover.
So I think that there is a lot of historical controversy, but it underscores that that occurred during wartime. It implicates potential commander-in-chief concerns about the exigencies of national defense that might provide an as-applied Article II challenge at the time. I'm not suggesting today, but the idea that a decision that was made and ultimately endorsed by this court, perhaps wrongly, in the Korematsu case, would support criminal prosecution under 241, which requires under United States versus Lanier that the right have been made specific so that there is notice to the president. I don't think that would have been satisfied.
All right, well, we could go through other historical examples. I won't do that. Let me just touch briefly on a couple of other things. One is the relevance of advice of counsel, and I wasn't clear what your answer is. So if the president gets advice from the attorney general that something is lawful, is that an absolute defense?
Yes, I think that it is under the principle of entrapment by estoppel. This is a due process doctrine that we referred to in our brief, our reply brief in Garland versus Cargill this term at page 19, where we cited authority of this court that if a authorized government representative tells you that what you are about to do is lawful, it would be a root violation of due process to prosecute you for that.
Won't that give presidents an incentive to be sure to pick an attorney general who will reliably tell the president that it is lawful to do whatever the president wants to do if there's any possibly conceivable argument in favor of it?
So I think the constitutional structure protects against that risk. The president nominates the attorney general, and the Senate provides advice and consent. And these are the sort of structural checks that have operated for 200 years to prevent the kind of abuses that my friend fears going forward as a result of this once-in-history prosecution.
Okay, let's get down to reality here, though, okay? The fact of the matter is presidents always pick attorney generals who are going to side with them, okay?
Right.
When you say that there are checks and balances, like Dreeben said, that's nonsense. Look at this guy, Merrick Garland. He is a tool, literally a tool, of Biden and his administration. He does the bidding of Joseph Robinette Biden on a consistent basis. He has weaponized the Justice Department, and Garland gleefully carries out the orders of Biden. It's as simple as that. And so you hear Alito say, well, wouldn't it be, doesn't the president pick somebody who's going to go along with his opinions and say that you're doing a lawful thing? As long as you're saying that it's lawful, I'll keep doing it, you know?
There's a lot of revelation in his entire statement there that I think it goes deeper than Biden and his picks, to be honest with you, based on everything I heard.
Well, tell me what.
Well, you got to go back to the beginning of this thing, because I just wrote down a little quick little notes here. But, you know, he's talking about it's baked into the Constitution. He talked about Watergate. He's talked about different things. But when I started going, wait a minute, let's connect some dots here. Let's go into, you know, the Watergate, and you go with trials where they have redacted scripts. You know,
people Watergate was, he was voted to impeach, but he didn't get that far. He resigned.
He resigned because he would have nothing to do with it, which gave the Democrats the win. But let's go back and, you know, and look at the characteristics of what happened then, what's going on now. Now, you might recall who wrote the impeachment papers.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary.
Right.
Rodham Clinton. And, you know, they were saying things based on lies and everything like that. Well, wait a minute now. You know, and creative writing. Well, gee, wasn't the Steele dossier against Trump creative writing? And who presented that? Hillary.
And you know
Rodham Clinton.
And you know who was a Justice Department official who was involved with presenting the Steele dog. It was Dreeben, this guy here, that was in court.
This all goes back, and I'm sitting there going, you know, we never really followed through on Nixon. And when you sit there and go, well, we had the tapes and there were missing pieces. Well, we have testimony today where documents are presented. Well, that part's redacted, and redacted, and you read between the lines. Wait a minute.
You know what they do? You know what they do in high schools and in colleges? They equate impeachment with guilty. Okay, it's literally presented as being guilty. They look at, they'll say, you know, President Nixon was impeached. Oh,
no, he wasn't.
Well, he was impeached. Impeaching is the process. Yeah,
it's
not
the process,
outcome.
But you're indicted. Doesn't
it's
make
like
you a felon.
Trump was impeached twice. Twice,
and
he
then
was
it was thrown out,
and he was found innocent twice.
But he was impeached. You're right there. You are impeached, but it never came to fruition, and we never got to hear it out. But see, that shows how far back things have gone, and that head of the snake was a young snake then and is an old snake now. And I'm just saying, you know, if the shoe fits, wear it, honey.
Justice Thomas had some comments about
absolutely.
He mentioned Operation Mongoose, I believe.
Yeah, that goes back to the Cuban Missile Crisis and Eisenhower and
Kennedy. Here's what he said.
Over in not so distant past, the presidents or certain presidents have engaged in various activity, coups or operations like Operation Mongoose when I was a teenager, and yet there were no prosecutions.
Yes.
Why? If what you're saying is right, it would seem that would have been ripe for criminal prosecution of someone.
So, Justice Thomas, I think this is a central question. The reason why there have not been prior criminal prosecutions is that there were not crimes.
Okay, that's Justice Thomas talking to Dreeben. It was cut off there at the end. I didn't do that. That was the way it came. But it's interesting. By the way, Justice Thomas and Justice Alito have great radio voices. They could have been in our business. But I do think that after listening to a large chunk of the debate yesterday, in my humble opinion, two things can happen. Either they're going to take it and send it back to the lower court to have them look at it again and be more specific about what it is that you're complaining about, or they're going to say, no, he has presidential immunity. What I would do if I were them is I would say, no, he has presidential immunity.
See, that's what I would say too. You send it back. They're going to sit there and take their time, and it's going to stay in the news because
it will go beyond the election. It won't interfere with the election, you know?
Well, you say that, but, you know, they'll find a way to manipulate and make it. Or they'll freeze the election. They'll find a way to do something that, you know, we need to get beyond this. One way or the other, good or bad, we need to get beyond it. And you know what? Damn the Democrats. The Republicans have a right to know. What are you going to do?
Listen, you know, the Republicans,
get off the bot and do it.
The Republicans have been a huge disappointment since they've had
I'm
the
talking
Congress.
About the voting base.
I'm talking about the congressmen, the people who are representatives of that voting base. They have been a big, big, fat zero. For example, for them to go along with the budget that we just passed, ridiculous. Ridiculous. Well, I try to, you know, I hear all the arguments and I think, okay, maybe this a backdoor reason why they're doing this. Maybe they want to let it get through this budget so that the Democrats will have to own it. But then
get caught with their pants down.
Yeah,
you know, another.
But then I think to myself, nah, there's no way, you know, there's no way of putting lipstick on this pig. Yeah. It's a bad budget. It should not have been passed. They shouldn't have done it. And they did it. The Republicans did it, you know. And why is it bad? It's bad because there's not a dime in the damn budget for the border. You know?
Well, you know, you should talk to your children because they can probably give you some insight to where they are. I talk to my kids, and, you know, their feeling is, what the hell is going on with all this money that we're giving away, and we don't have this money when there are things here that we need to take care of? So in the mind of a 19, 20, 21-year-old, 22, 25, yeah, they don't get it. So I do think, though, that the Supreme Court has the opportunity, serve justice, whether it's good or bad, serve it, because our elected officials aren't going to do it, and then you'll find out what the American public, how they really feel and what they're going to do. Let's just get off the pot and get it over with.
Okay, I agree with you. I think it should be done. Make a decision, you know, put on your big boy pants, as they would say.
Whatever you wear.
By the way, I listened to Ketanji Brown Jackson yesterday, and she's the newest, the one who doesn't know what a woman is and couldn't define it during her nomination. She was absolutely lost in the conversation.
Because she doesn't know.
Well, somebody said, and it's true, that's what you get for picking a justice from the Washington, D.C. district, because they are all diversity picks. They're all people who aren't qualified to be judges, never mind justices, and that's what you get.
Well, we're stuck with her now for a while, and that's not an insult to her. By the way, have you seen the house that she and her husband just moved into?
No. Is it nice?
Oh, it's a big multi-million dollar mansion.
Wow. Well, hey,
where did this money come from as a justice? Because, you know,
she must have married well, Bill. You know,
man. No, I think he married well. You know, even you take the combined incomes, you know, I know some people, and I won't say where or how, but,
yeah,
you know, the guy makes $700,000 a year, so more than these politicians.
Yeah.
And he doesn't afford a multi-million dollar house. As a matter of fact, renting an apartment, a nice apartment at that, very, very, very nice, very, very, very nice, nicer than most houses.
Then you
I
see
know.
Kavanaugh's house, and Kavanaugh looks like he lives in a lower middle income area. I mean, it's an ordinary looking house.
Yeah, so that's
house.
My point. What's going on? These little woke liberals that come up, they got money. Does that not stink to you?
Hey, listen, you know, you're not supposed to look at stuff like that. You're not supposed to even question it. But she had no understanding of the Constitution, or she was literally saying stuff about, if we don't have presidential immunity, means he'll be like a dictator, and it'll become like a criminal office. She was talking like an empty parking lot. She was like vacuous, and she was out there telling us the dumbest things. I'm thinking, this is a Supreme Court justice. This is the problem with our government too. If we start picking people not for their qualifications but because of diversity,
well, she's got
equity,
the job,
inclusion,
and she's not going to lose that job.
Well, that's true. She's got it for life. I would imagine she's thankful every day. She probably gets down on her knees every day and says, thank you, God, or whoever you are, because they don't really, the left has a hard time believing in God.
Thank you, Hillary.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Hillary. Oh, my God. Hey, John Lovitz. Remember John Lovitz? John Lovitz used to be on Saturday Night Live.
That's the ticket,
Yeah. John Lovitz was on with Jesse Waters yesterday.
All right.
And Lovitz was complaining about the fact that people in Hollywood, they don't stand up for Israel. You know, you would think, because there's a large segment of the Hollywood community that's Jewish, that they would have the cojones to stand up for Israel. But they don't. See, this. I've always believed there's the Jewish religion, there's the Christian faith, and then there's liberalism, which is also a religion, which supersedes Judaism and the Christian faith. That's my opinion. But anyway, John Lovitz with Jesse Waters yesterday. Listen.
Let's bring in actor and comedian John Lovitz. John, what do you see happening across the country?
Well, it's what I was told growing up by my father, that the Jews in Germany were German first, and they couldn't believe this was happening, and they didn't believe it. And there's a book called Night that Elie Wiesel wrote about the Holocaust, and he was 15 years old, and he said there was a guy in his little village who was something wrong with him, but he was the village idiot and just would say crazy stuff, and nobody would listen to him. And one day the guy disappeared for 4 days, and then he popped back up, and he said his hair was wild, and he was screaming. He goes, "They're putting all the Jews on trains and taking them and killing them," and nobody believed him because he was the village idiot. And you hear this growing up, and I it's happening again, and I still think a lot of Jewish people are in disbelief. And they go, "You're a Jewish American." I go, "No, I'm an American, and I happen to be, my religion's Jewish, and I happen to be a comedian, but I'm an American citizen, and I don't know how this can't be upsetting to everybody." And I also, I don't understand it, because Israel is a democracy like we are, and Israel is our ally. So what don't you get? And secondly, the students on Columbia blocking Jewish kids from going into school. I tweeted something about it because, I mean, I went to college, and I can't imagine having to deal with this. I was 18, and I lived in a fine arts dorm, and everybody had a different ethnic background, Chinese, Mexican, African-American. I'm Jewish. We would have dinner together every night. We would roast each other about it. And then I'd say, "But it doesn't mean anything. We're starting our lives. You want to be a singer. You want to be a painter. You want to be an actor. I want to be an actor, you know." And I'm thinking, these kids are in high school. They worked their butt off to get into a great school like Columbia, and now they have to deal with this, and it's horrible. So I said I wanted to say something to help them, you know. And like you said, it's like weeds. If you don't nip it in the bud, it's just going to keep spreading and get worse and worse. And we've seen it get worse and worse.
Yeah, we sure have.
So I feel compelled to say
something. We have seen it get as worse as it possibly can be. You heard the gentleman at the top.
It can get way worse.
Absolutely. You heard him at the top say, "You know, I couldn't go on campus and burn a cross and chant KKK and prevent black students from getting to class." Why do you think, or about anybody, about transgender people, gay people,
well, what
women,
you said about,
why is it different with Jewish students?
I don't know. I think people like, you know, or Jewish like myself or naive and thought, "Oh, there's not all this anti-Semitism." I think it's always been there. It's just coming out. But what you kind of said about, you know, you respect everybody, whatever their religion, whatever their race, you respect everybody. That's what Judaism, the religion, is about, is respecting life and people. And I still think, you know, people have a right to protest peacefully, and they have a, you know, normally you'd get a permit and then you get a place to protest. Right. I don't know why they're allowed to do it on the school. And I don't know how people that aren't students are just camping out in the middle of the school. They should be like, "Isn't that trespassing?" I don't understand.
What I don't understand is, you have the President of the United States, you have the White House. They won't even touch this. Do you expect more from the leadership in this country?
I do. Yeah, I think anyone doing this against anybody like this should stop it. I mean, preventing students from going to class, it's ridiculous. It happened to a friend of mine. I was speaking to her this morning. She has one kid at Duke University, and she has another kid at Cornell. At Duke University, months ago, they started doing a protest, and they nipped it in the bud and said, "No, you can't do that here," and they've had no problems since. Cornell didn't. They've had all these problems. Her daughter couldn't go to class. She couldn't take a test. And the teacher wouldn't respond to her, and she had trouble retaking it, and finally got to. But it's bad, and I don't know why. People say, "Why are you speaking up? Why aren't other people in Hollywood who are way bigger names than me not saying anything?" And my answer is, I don't know. I think they're afraid, or they're afraid they're going to lose their, it'll hurt their business. But I feel like it's so bad. How can you not say something? Like, you have to. And then, you know, people go, "Well, who are you?" I go, "Look, you asked me to come on the show. I'm not out there with a megaphone." You know what I mean? But I appreciate the opportunity to say something.
You're being very humble to say there's not a lot of names out there bigger than John Lovitz. Sean, thank you so much for joining Jesse Waters Primetime.
Thank you.
Dose of Truth. Very refreshing. We appreciate it.
That's Jesse Waters with John Lovitz. Yeah. And, you know, it's true. They haven't got... the people in Hollywood who were Jewish are the silence is deafening, as they would say.
Mm. You know, he was talking about education and everything. USC.
Yeah.
You know, they canceled graduation ceremony after facing security concerns over pro-Palestinian protests.
Well, I doesn't surprise me. When was it yesterday we were talking about the NFL draft was concerned about having protests yesterday? You know, there was something else too, Bill, that's coming
The correspondence
up.
Dinner
yeah,
this
that's
weekend.
What it is. Yes.
They're talking about that. But I think that is staged because that's a media pretty much Democrat thing, and they make fun of Republicans. They do it every year, and they get their political memes and jokes out there. But there's going to be protesting, pro-Palestinian,
yeah,
that's planned to go there and crash it. And I'm going, well, what a perfect time for the Dems to get this out there because they're pushing that. They're pretty much anti-Israel. So it's a great time. They're going to have all the media attention there. And, oh, my God, they're attacking us because we haven't given them money.
We have young Jewish students who are protesting for Palestine.
Because
young
they
Jews
don't know.
Yeah, that's true. We also have gays for Palestine, gays for Hamas. Don't they realize what would happen to them if they were in Gaza?
They're not taught that. You see, you don't want to teach history. That's why history has to be erased. And then you divide the people, and then you unite them under a false agenda.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we got to unite together and fight for this cause. And when they get that cause, now you've been headed, you know, it's like this old Twilight Zone to serve man, where, you
oh,
know, we're
yeah. bit, I remember
classic,
this.
Classic
oh,
episode.
To serve
where,
man. And you thought, oh, to serve mankind.
And they were doing all this great stuff.
Yeah.
Helping the human race. And, you know, you want to come and see us at home? Sure, you can. And they were bringing people on their ships to take
to
them
serve
away.
Man.
And the guy that was saying, oh, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. As he's going on the ship, his secretary comes up, goes, no, 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 don't. There. It's a cookbook. And he can't get off the ship, you know.
To serve
yeah, they were,
man. Ay,
they
yeah,
were
yeah.
sitting there, you know, what do? You know, you fatten up the herd.
So many young you know? People, God bless them, so many
you're,
young
you're
people.
You're being led off to the slaughter.
These are the same kids who just a few years ago were still in, like, you know, junior high school. And all of a sudden they're in college and they'd like to think that they had the answers because I thought I had the answers when I was 21. When I was 20, I thought I was the smartest guy on the block. I couldn't believe how stupid my parents and their generation were, you know? The fact of the matter is they were incredibly smart because they had all this worldly experience, and I was the numbskull, you know? But mm-hmm. I was not about to admit it. I mean, God bless us. When my parents were my age at the time, they were just about getting into wars, a world war. You know, the people of my father's age were pulling up their big boy pants, and they were getting into military uniforms, and they were training, and they were going out, and they were doing some incredible things. Young men, can you imagine young men flying like B-17s and B-24s and B-25s? Guys like 20 years old flying these big B-17 bombers on these missions throughout Europe. I'm talking about kids. Think about it for a second. Look at your 20, 21-year-old and think, my God, his great-grandfather flew a B-17 when he was his age. You know? I mean, it is truly amazing when you think about what they accomplished back then and how we've coddled and how we've babied the youths of today, and they have no true understanding of what the heck is going on, you know?
We've never really, though, past and present especially, we've never really properly educated our youth, and we've given them the keys to the car at a time when they really didn't know how to drive. The keys to life, you know, the studies have shown, liberal studies have shown, that men don't even hit maturity point until they're 25 or 26 years old, you know, and, you know, actually it's all, that's women. Women are 25 or 26. Men are about 27, 28. And, you know, when you think back in your life, you know, if you're honest with yourself, that's pretty true. It really is pretty true. Yet we're manipulating those people and giving them, you know, certain power. It's crazy what's going on.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing. I thought this is interesting. If you've been to San Diego, you'd appreciate this. The Oceanside Pier, big pier.
Oh, it's on fire.
It caught fire. They had a big restaurant on it at one time. It was open until the COVID pandemic. And then the city spent like $5.5 million upgrading the electric like last year.
The electric and the pipes, which means the water going to the plumbing coming out, all upgraded. And all of a sudden, she caught fire last night.
Yeah. So a lot of strange fires and things burning in this country, but nobody's addressing it because they want you to believe that there's nothing to see here. Also, Bill, did you see that court documents released indicate that Jack Smith and the FBI were after Obama and North Korea-related documents in the Mar-a-Lago raid? Think about that for a second. You want to know what they were looking for down in the raid on President Trump? They were looking for documents about Obama and the North Korea-related situation. So, and by the way, President Trump had the authority to take it with him because at the time he was the president. By the way, if they have the presidential immunity, then you watch. This case is gone.
I don't think any documents they're looking for, and my hunch is they are not at Mar-a-Lago, and they're probably not in the continental U.S. I would just leave it at that.
Well, you know, he has President Trump is nobody's fool. You know, once shame on you, twice shame on me. If they were to raid his place again, I'm sure they won't find anything. Well, this time around. Although I think that he knew they were coming, don't you? I think he knew they were going to. I mean, even though it was a surprise, the way they did it with the guns and the
it was
sirens
a surprise.
And stuff.
It was a stage show for the media.
But I think he knew they were coming. They were making an appearance.
But I don't think he knew it was going to be a big theatrical production. But now I think they're all ready for it. Everything's a theatrical production. And, you know, Biden's a puppet.
One more thing before we end the show.
Oh, boy.
I want to play this for you. Chris Christie?
Yeah, fat boy. Yeah, doughboy.
Yeah. He thinks that Vivek and Trump, he thinks that they should die. He was on stage in Chicago at some
function. Sounds like a threat. That sounds like a death threat.
Listen to this.
I would have preferred any of those people over Trump. Hmm. Ramaswamy and Trump, I would have hoped for a death match. Where they both die.
A literal death match.
Where they both die.
I love the clowns who clap in the audience like Seal. Oh,
that says applause. I better. Yeah, come on. Christy, there's not a lot you can say about the Pillsbury Doughboy, you know, but he lost his job, obviously with Pillsbury, and he's not a political contender. And Fat Boy, just so you know, nobody voted for you, so nobody wants to hear
Chris,
you.
Chris, just go back to closing down the New Jersey beaches and then going out there. And
well, buy some donuts while you're on the way to the beach with your, you know,
your family,
whale outfit.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I think that's going to do it, my friend. We have a show tomorrow, a weekend show?
I don't know. We usually do. I mean, it's up to you. Do we want to do one?
Yeah, I think we should do it, I guess.
We'll do one then. Hey, what can I say?
It keeps the two of us off the street, you know? I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. You know, walking down the street with my pant leg rolled up, you know, and winking at the girls when they don't go by, you know.
Hey, I hear you.
It's a tough way to make a living.
I, you know, not that I'm trying to name drop here, but my cohort in crime is up for a movie part. He's in a
hush. Can't talk about that.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to jinx it, but if you want to see our friend Bill on the big screen, say put in a prayer or two to the guy upstairs. You never can tell. You know, and then I can rub shoulders with him, like, huh, I knew him when, you know.
It's not a big thing. It'll be a limited distribution on the tube. And
yeah,
the
famous last words. It'll be a small
movie. No, it is a
movie,
limited thing.
Small
it's
movie,
a real small
little
thing.
Part, and watch. It'll end up being a blockbuster, you know.
No, it's a small budget place, and it's limited, and it's kind of typecasting.
Hey, Rocky was a small budget film, too, okay? They had a
yeah.
You know, he tried 60 times, 60, 60 times to sell that script, and he was rejected 60 times, and then he got an acceptance. So
I don't know Sylvester Stallone, but I do know a friend of his.
Do you really?
Yeah, so big deal, right? Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, well, What is 6 degrees of separation? Anyway, hey, listen, if you want to contact us, go to our website. It's www.itsanotherday.com, okay? www.itsanotherday.com. And you can contact us by email there. You can download old shows if you want to hear more of us over the weekend. And it's just got everything you need right there in one convenient location, as they would say, on the radio.
Yeah. We used to have a carrier pigeon. I mean, there's still feathers in the cage. There's droppings in there.
Oh,
but
good.
I haven't seen the pigeon in a while, so I guess it had to go a long way to get that, what would you call that, pigeon mail?
I would call that lunch. Anyway.
That might explain the feathers.
That's it.
And while the cage door is open and there was, you know, some, I think that the fox lost a tooth.
They
too.
Say it tastes like chicken. Hey, listen, that's going to do it for us. You want to end it like you normally do?
Sure. Are you ready?
I'm all set.
Brace yourself, ladies and gentlemen, because on the count of 1, 2, 3, hasta la vista, baby! We're out of here!
This is CRN America.